Hey, bestie.
Hey, bestie.
How am I sounding right now?
You're sounding great.
Okay. Because I had to move into my bedroom because my house is being painted. And this episode was about to be Unsubs, a Criminal Minds podcast featuring Matt, the house painter. Because there's a little balcony right next to the desk where I record, like a fake... I have a Victorian, so it's like a fake balcony. And he was literally painting the balcony as I was going to sit down to record, his face fully in the window, like inches away from me. And I was like, I just can't do it because he's going to learn so much about me that is unnecessary for him to learn.
Matt was going to be a part of the magic.
Yeah, and he's such a nice guy. And he's already like been harassed by wasps at my house, and you know, like he's had a time of it. So my man has been blasting wasps left and right with paint guns, and he blasted these like pissed off ones, and they went for him.
Oh, no.
So my man fell off the ladder and he was like, no, I'm good, and he was back to work 2 days later. As famously, I do have a wasp house, but I feel like actually Abby's about to visit, and I feel like this is going to be the least wasp my house has ever been, because between my husband and superstar Matt, the house painter, they have been like killing wasps left and right, spraying everywhere. So should be good to go by the time you get here.
That's cool. See, the thing about me is I'm not really like skeeved out by bugs. Like I say that and I feel like I sound like such a pick me, but it's really just that I spent too much time in Florida as a kid to like be bothered by bugs and insects and lizards and stuff. And it's like now become like kind of a joke amongst my roommates that like I'm the patriarch of this house because I will just pick up bugs and put them outside while as everyone else freaks out. Same at work too. Like the building I work in is pretty old, so we get bugs in there fairly frequently and everyone loses their mind. And I'm like, it's fine. I'll just pick it up and move it. It shouldn't make me feel as good as it does, but it's like that everyone's like, oh, wow, she's so brave. And I'm just like, I weigh like a million times heavier than this bug is. What's it going to do?
But after Matt sprayed that wasp nest, which was right by like the outside door that I use all the time that I just didn't notice, like a massive wasp nest. One of them, the survivor, the strongest wasp of all, came into the house and faced off with me when I was home alone.
Oh no, did you feel victimized?
I did feel victimized. I normally I have a wasp spray, but like my husband has gone through 3 cans of it just eradicating wasps. So all I had was this like, you know,
the skin on your back in a dream.
Organic floor cleaner. So I'm spraying.
Was
the
it
wasp.
Like Mrs. Myers?
It was not Mrs. Myers. It was Nature's Promise.
Okay. Another good one. Okay.
But apple scented, and I'm spraying this wasp, and it's not doing shit.
It's like them apples have nothing on me.
And the wasp has already survived Matt, and you know the spraying of the pain.
This is the final boss,
and it came for me, man. Like I have never had. Like, listen, y'all remember my wasp infestation 2022 last fall, October 2022. None of them came for me.
Instead of October Fest, it's October Nest.
Girl, none of those like thousands of wasps ever like actually saw me and came for me. This one saw me and came for me. And I was like, ah! I was spraying it. And eventually it was so soaked with like deliciously scented apple fragrant all-purpose Nature's Promise organic cleaner that it was like, I need to have a rest. And then I threw a magazine at it.
Take that.
And it was still alive.
What kind of magazine was it? What was this wasp getting educated on?
I'm not going to say the name of the magazine, but there's this magazine. If you live in the Hudson Valley, you've definitely heard of it. And it had like a really cool cover. So we had saved it for like years and years. And it was like on display on our mid-century modern coffee table. And I grabbed it and I threw it and I screamed and the wasp hit the floor and was like concealed by the magazine. And then like hours later, the wasp was like crawling out from underneath the magazine. So you know what I did, bitch.
What?
I hit it with more of the Nature's Promise organic all-purpose apple cleaner.
Oh my God.
Until it died. Because eventually, that's enough to kill anybody. I didn't mean for that to be my fun fact, but it is.
But that's your fun fact.
Yeah, you have a funner fun fact, though.
Oh my God. Yeah, for a second I was like, what? I don't know how I failed to mention this to you, because this happened like a while ago. How much context do I need to provide?
I don't know. Whatever you're comfortable with our listeners hearing, I guess.
Basically, I keep getting targeted ads for like engagement rings right now on my social medias. And I was texting Mac and I was like, maybe once I'm engaged, if and when that happens, I should apply to be on Say Yes to the Dress. And I, like, found their application and everything. And unfortunately, like, one of the questions is, like, what's a fun thing about you? It could be, like, whether you've, like, run a marathon or, like, anything like that. It doesn't have to be, like, exciting. Just something that you think someone watching television would be, like, that's cool to know about you. And you know what I realized? I'd probably have to be, like, I have a podcast. Imagine that. It's like trying on a dress and like the Kleinfeld people are like, so do you listen to podcasts? Because it would be have to be like some really awkward way of shoehorning that in. And I'd be like, yeah, did you know that I'm actually a co-host of Unsubs or Criminal Minds podcast? Ever heard of it? But then I'm telling Mac about this and I'm like, yeah, I mean, it might just be like the time I applied to be on The Bachelor, which I guess was like some lore I hadn't dropped before because you didn't know about that.
No, I can't believe you didn't fucking tell me.
So this was back before we started our podcast. This was in like the fresh days of the pandemic in like spring 2020. And I saw that there was like a casting call to be on The Bachelor. And I was like, well, you know, we're in a pandemic. My career dreams are dead right now. I'm like, okay, I fully have a relationship going right now, but like, we'll pretend we're not together. It'll be fine. And I applied to be on The Bachelor, and I didn't get picked. Spoilers. I've also never watched The Bachelor, which I feel like made it kind of more fun. But I filled out my application, and like my roommate at the time was like, you know, you have to make it exciting somehow. Like you can't, like, you know, add some spice. So I basically wrote the whole thing pretending I was like really into witchcraft. Basically being like, I believe because the tarot cards told me that I will find love on this show. And I like basically made it sound like I fully believed in destiny and fate. And I really like threw out all the horoscope stuff and all of the tarot cards and all of the crystals. And they didn't, you know, I guess they didn't want to buy what I was selling, but I thought it was fun.
Oh my God. Well, anyways, this is Unsubs, a Criminal Minds podcast.
Ever heard of it?
I'm Mac.
I'm Abigail.
And we recap, rate, and review all 334 episodes of Criminal Minds.
In a way you could call us historians.
Yeah, I feel like a historian when I'm fucking typing up the longest profile ever.
I feel like we're on something today. I feel like the vibes are different. And I think part of it's the fact that this is the first episode in a minute we haven't had a guest and we're like unsupervised.
Yeah, I do feel unsupervised. Also, I wrote this recap at like 1 a.m. It's going to be a blast. Spoiler alert, I'm not a fan of this episode.
Yeah, Mac texted me and said that she canonically hates this episode.
Listen, as always, as I said with the hobo episode, after I actually watched it, I did find things to love in this episode. It does have one of my favorite victim kill scenes of all time, probably top 5 in this show, maybe even like top 3. I love this victim kill scene. We're gonna languish in it together. We're gonna walk through every insane choice that was made. But before we can do that, we should talk about our rating criteria, because we do rate each episode of Criminal Minds.
Our rating criteria is as follows. We rate each episode on a scale of 100 points, and those points are distributed across these 5 categories. Criminal / serial killer, character development / character arcs, forensics and context, script writing, and background characters.
And we are in no way, shape, or form associated with the television show Criminal Minds, but we sure would like to be.
Yeah, mention us as your favorite podcast next time. Good God.
Yeah, come on, guys. Should we get into it?
Yeah, let's get into it.
So this is With Friends Like These. We open on a blue eye and some dramatic music.
I literally thought my computer froze because they linger on that shot for such a long time.
The pupil is dilated. We pull out and we meet Ben. He's pushing a cart in the supermarket with his friend Matt. We also meet Yolanda.
Hi, Yolanda.
Hi, Yolanda. What a choice for a name.
She's kind of hot.
She is kind of hot. She's the hottest of the 3 friends, for sure. So Yolanda is supposed to be getting the chips, but actually she's looking for guacamole. And then there's Tony, who was actually looking for the chips. There's this whole sequence where they find the chips, but they can't find the guacamole.
It was so good.
Yeah, because they were like, you can't get chips without the guacamole. And Abigail started texting me and listing other, like, chip options, like chips and hummus, chips and salsa.
How are we going to eat chips if we don't have guacamole? And I was, like, asking the big questions.
They get soggy, is all I'm saying.
Ben.
Hey, you let them sit too long, they taste like mush.
Then eat them when you pour them.
What if something comes up? And what if you have to use the bathroom? Where's Yolanda?
Relax, she's picking up the chips.
They're out of guacamole.
I don't like guacamole anyway.
I got chips.
How are we going to have chips with no guacamole?
They go to checkout, and Ben, he notices this customer at a different register, like the register right next to him, and he's like staring at her. He turns to her and says, quote, I have a hypothetical for you. How long till after you pour your cereal do you wait to put it in your mouth? How long till after you pour your cereal do you wait to put it in your mouth? And she goes, I don't eat cereal. And Ben's friends kind of roast him for this faux pas. And Tony even says, with an ass like that, she eats something. Because Tony's kind of a bad boy. So during this awkward interaction between Ben and this other customer, Ben's 3 friends seem like super invested in this interaction. They stop what they're doing and they just kind of like stand there and stare. And after the customer brushes Ben off, his 3 friends are like, let's do it, Ben. She's perfect for us. And Ben's like, I have to go to sleep. And they're like, we'll do it first and then you can sleep. So now we cut to, this is it, guys, one of my favorite scenes in all of Criminal Minds. We have followed that customer that Ben spoke to, Miss I Don't Eat Cereal, and we're at her home. Actually, her name is Karen Haywood. So she's at home. She's working on her computer, and she's eating Oreos. She's still dressed in her work uniform, which looks like a nurse outfit. And she hears this, like, clattering sound, and she looks around, and she's kind of like, eh, it's nothing. Like, she's not bothered by it. Then she goes up and goes to the fridge. She's looking for another late-night snack. She searches the fridge for something, anything to quench her appetite. Now, we all love Oreos. It's kind of the perfect cookie. The crunch of the chocolate. The creamy center. The perfect amount of give and take. But for Karen, the simple pleasure of Oreo is not enough. She needs something better. She rifles through her fridge, past the tinfoil leftovers, which are kept in the butter compartment for whatever reason, past the fruit, past the other dessert options, and selects the best snack, the only snack, as far as I'm concerned. She selects a stalk of raw celery. She picks raw celery. She actually has a big old tub of celery with multiple sticks of celery in it. And unfortunately for her, just as she's like mid-celery stalk chew, Ben barges in and she flings the tub of celery in the air, kind of like yeets it, as Ben attacks her and stabs her. And I just feel like it's peak cinema.
It really is. It really is peak cinema. I personally would go for celery over Oreos. So maybe, I don't know what that says about me.
I feel like you're wrong.
But Oreos are gross.
Oh my goodness. You are so wrong. Oreos are so good. Also, Oreos are vegan.
Yeah, and they're gross.
Well, so what is a cookie that you like?
I'm like a chocolate chip girly.
All right, so going from chocolate chip cookies to celery. Do not gaslight me into thinking that she is correct, because I see this scene and I'm like, this is insane.
Okay, but she's clearly wearing like medical clothing, so she's probably like, you know, trying to be health conscious.
Then why'd you check out the big box of Oreos and start with, I feel like transitioning from Oreos to celery. And celery is such an odd choice for me. Like, I get eating a carrot. A big stock of raw celery, cold raw celery that's just been in the fridge. When I was rewatching the show, I had shown this scene to my husband. And when I was recapping it, I showed it to him again last night. And he was like, you've shown this to me before. And I was like, yeah, because it bothers me. And he was like, you think everything is unhinged, because I was calling it unhinged. And I was like, I'm going to tell my listeners that.
How about I put on the Instagram a poll, celery or Oreos?
Yes, do it. Because I will not back down. I'm saying unequivocally, you cannot go Oreo to celery. It does not work. It is not a good decision. So we're going to cut to BAU headquarters in Quantico, Virginia. And we see a picture of Emily Prentice hanging on the wall in the spot where they will one day put the photograph of Deputy Director Douglas Bailey.
I was thinking that too.
Morgan finds Garcia just, like, staring at the photo, and he's like, quote, Prentice wouldn't want us to sulk.
Penelope, you gotta stop staring at her. Prentice wouldn't want us to sulk, you know that.
Not sulking. Surrounded by testosterone now.
She would also want us to embrace Seaver.
I baked.
Congratulations, Gradua?
Kevin ate the tea. And the E.
And Garcia reveals that she has baked sparkly cupcakes. They are supposed to say, congratulations, graduate, but they say, congratulations, Gradua, because Garcia's boyfriend, Kevin, ate the T and the E.
Kevin, when are we going to see Kevin again?
I know. I could go for some Kevin. Meanwhile, Hotch and Rossi discuss bringing an experienced profiler on the team in addition to Seaver because she is new. The team meets in the roundtable room and Garcia introduces them to a case, which of course is in my favorite state. It's in Portland, Oregon.
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 Oregon?
Oregon. Oregon. I thought you knew how to say it.
Oregon.
Oregon. We learn about Jay Johnson, who was a DJ, and Karen Haywood, the nurse who loved the celery. They have both been attacked, bludgeoned, and stabbed multiple times.
I'm going to Portland, Oregon, and it's not for a Dead Moon concert. So, Jay Johnson, a DJ, was cutting through an alley on his way home after leaving a club when he was bludgeoned by a pipe and then stabbed 31 times. His watch, his cell, and his computer were stolen. That was 2 days ago. Now, early this morning, Karen Haywood, 30-year-old nurse, she died during a home invasion. She was stabbed 40 times, but first she was bludgeoned with weapons of opportunity.
8 different ones, to be exact.
That's too many weapons for one person.
There was a left and a right-handed killer, according to the ME report.
Yeah, but 8 different weapons.
So we're looking for a group.
Yeah, it seems that way. And the left-handed wounds were deeper than the right.
Maybe a woman was involved?
Or a weak man.
So the BAU thinks it's a pack.
A pack?
Yeah.
Do we have a song about that?
I don't know. Do we? Freedom isn't up to them, it's only up to us. Us! I'm the alpha, I'm the leader, I'm the one who trusts. Trust! Together we do whatever it takes, we're in this pack for life. Ooh. We're wolves, we don't got none. So we cut to Ben and his friends, and they're kind of having like a goth Bauhaus Susie and the Banshees party while Ben is trying to sleep. His friends are taking drugs, listening to loud music, you know, doing naughty stuff. Bad boy Tony has this lighter that he flicks open from and closed from time to time. You know how those bad kids at your school used to hang out around the playground, playing with yo-yos, flipping lighters. Ben is like, please, I want to sleep. And Matt is like, not until you get cleaned up. And then Ben realizes that he is covered in Karen's blood. We cut to the BAU jet.
Hey, girl.
And the BAU team discusses the overkill used on both the victims. Usually overkill can mean a personal connection between the unsub and the victim, but Hotch points out that it can also mean extreme anger. And in this case, the victim can be a surrogate for the unsub, meaning someone else that they cannot take their anger out on. Rossi also calls the unsubs a pack of night owls.
Hoot hoot.
Hoot hoot. And says that they are, quote, stalking and killing other night owls, birds of prey. They are disorganized. You can get a little disorganized killer as a treat. We also learned that one of the weapons of opportunity in Karen's murder was a ceramic cat. So we're back with Ben. His friends want to go to a home store to fix the sink in his bathroom. And Tony says, quote, laziness is next to slothfulness. Tony's playing with the lighter like there's no tomorrow. It's like a cigarette lighter. It's like one of those little lighters that you use if you smoke cigarettes, I guess. Ben is like, please, I want to sleep. And then Matt gets physical with Ben and shoves him against the wall and is like, we are going to this home store, like it or not.
Your sink needs a new washer.
Got a washer in here?
I don't work for you.
You sure about that, Ben?
Maybe we should do a home store run.
Just put a bowl in it.
Ah, come on. It's laziness next to slothfulness, Ben.
It's a 24-hour home store near the freeway.
Guys,
get your keys.
No.
You back talking to me?
I don't feel like going.
I don't care how you feel. Now get your keys and let's go.
For you non-Americans, a home store, quote, sells foodstuffs or goods of a similar domestic nature intended for the day-to-day consumption or use by persons in the locality of the shop. At Karen's crime scene, Hotch and Rossi meet Detective Colburn, and they talk about how the pack mentality can influence the physicality of the crime. Rossi also points out that although some things of value were stolen from Karen's house, a flat screen TV, desktop computer, and a bicycle were left behind. Hotch then suggests that the BAU is instead looking for a single unsub because the unsub didn't take these heavy, high-value items with him. And then Hotch also points out that there are a bunch of like shoe prints on the floor, but they're all the same size and the same shoe. And he's like, there's no way this pack of unsubs all have the same shoe size.
Imagine it's a pack of like triplets.
I'm like, isn't that important? Isn't that like something that would be like one of the first things that we would note? You know, like there are a bunch of shoe prints, but it's all there. There's only one type of shoe print found. I don't know. Anyways, Reed and Seaver investigate the DJJ crime scene, which is an alleyway. They determine that the unsubs are probably all around the same age and they probably are involved in this party scene. And Morgan is at the supermarket talking to a manager. Tells Morgan that there was, quote, a weird guy mumbling to himself and swatting the air like someone was bugging him.
You're sure you didn't see a group here that night?
No, just that woman and a few other people, but no groups. Look, if our cameras work, you could see for yourself.
Is it possible there was a group out in the parking lot?
It was a ghost town. Nothing happens here that late.
All right, tell me where you saw Karen first.
She was buying cookies, and then she went to the register.
Any other customers there?
There was one at the other checkout.
Why would you have two registers open that time of night?
There was this weird guy mumbling to himself and swatting the air like someone was bugging.
What did this guy look like?
Regular white dude, greasy. He was buying salt, bag of chips, water.
Did this guy and Karen interact?
He said something to her, but she blew him off.
Just put her head down and said something dismissive back?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
We tend to do that when strange people talk to us. Unfortunately, it can backfire.
We got to see what we thought was how the events unfolded with Karen's death. But now we actually get to see how they actually happened. And we see that the unsub is like pushing the cart and talking to himself. And it's just him. And that the three friends are imaginary.
I was dumb and it took me until this moment to realize they were imaginary.
Well, I remember this episode always feeling like when I first watched it being like, okay, they're imaginary. But I mean, like, I don't know if you're necessarily being dumb. I just think the show tricked you, which is good because you're not usually tricked. So it's okay to have an episode that tricks you from time to time.
Yes.
Just don't get fooled again. So Hotch does a three-way call with Rossi, Garcia, and Morgan, and they put everything together, speculating that it is a single unsub, probably on drugs, which explains both the overkill and the disorganization. Garcia reveals that she has checked local pawn shops to see if any of the stolen items were sold there, and she can't find anything. Rossi suggests that the unsub is selling these stolen items for drugs, going right to the source. Get another cut to Ben and his friends. I put friends in quotation marks in this recap so many times. They're in a car watching a man unloading things from his van. Ben's friends are encouraging Ben to, quote, take the friggin' hammer and bang him in the head, him being the guy unloading the van. And Ben is like, no, thank you. And Tony's like, you have to, Ben. The whole reason we went to the home store is to get the hammer. So Ben does it. I do like that Ben's like, I don't want to do it. And the friends are like, nah, man, you have to do it. They're like his hype squad, but in a bad way.
They are the devil on his shoulder.
The next day, we find this latest victim who was bludgeoned in his home and stabbed 40 times. So he brought in his groceries or whatever and was killed in his home. Luckily, the victim lived in an apartment building with thin walls. I don't know why I said luckily. It's kind of like unluckily. So the BAU go to ask the neighbors if they heard something. And we meet like one of my all-time favorites.
Oh, she was phenomenal.
I mean, I really feel like they drew out this scene because they realized how good she was, and they were like, we just got to keep this party rolling.
It's so good.
It's so good. We meet Miss Donnelly, who has, quote, been in this building for 27 years. She looks like she should be telling us about the weather forecast for the next few days.
She looks like she should be retired from telling us about the weather forecast.
That is accurate. They knock on her door and she answers, looking fresh as all hell with her slate gray knit turtleneck. She's holding a mug of coffee and will not put it down. She's not the kind of woman who, if the FBI knock on her door and tell her that her upstairs neighbor was bludgeoned and, like, savagely murdered, she's not the kind of woman to put down that mug of coffee for anything. She tells the BAU, quote, the worst incident we ever had was when Benjamin Heedley up in 402 found out his wife was sleeping with the cleaner guy and shot him in the groin. The ones she's telling this to are Morgan and Seaver, and you can just see it in Seaver's eyes. She's like, what the fuck did I get myself into?
The worst incident we ever had was when Benjamin Heedley up in 402 found out his wife was sleeping with the cleaner guy and shot him in the groin.
Ma'am, when did you hear the screaming?
Oh, it was late. It was around 3:30.
Well, then you must have heard the unsub, because according to the ME, Joe died around 2:45.
What?
Our suspect, ma'am.
What exactly was the person yelling?
He said, I was just a kid. I was a kid then. I don't want to kill anymore.
Was anybody talking back to him?
I assumed he was yelling into the phone or something.
You know, maybe he was having a conversation with his hallucination.
Guys, if you hear your upstairs neighbor shouting, I was just a kid. I was a kid then. I don't want to kill anymore. At 3:30 in the morning, please call the police. I know we don't always need to call the police, but, like, if you hear your neighbor yelling, I was just a kid. I was a kid then. I don't want to kill anymore. Please call the police. Like, this is an opportunity to get the police involved, in my personal opinion. Morgan talks to Seaver about hallucinations, and CBS must love this actress because Miss Donnelly is still here.
Was hearing voices.
Oh, we're not really sure, ma'am. You've been a really big help, Mrs. Donnelly. Thank you very much.
If you have any more questions for me, you know where to find me.
If you have any more questions for me, you know where to find me. Bye. And then, like, turns and goes back inside her apartment.
I wish we got more of her.
I want her in every episode. So Morgan and Seaver regroup, sans Donnelly, unfortunately. They discuss PCP hallucinations compared to hallucinations that you might experience from mental illness. And Seaver goes, quote, we know he's in his 20s and was acting paranoid in the supermarket, to which I say hashtag relatable. So those are the only things that they really for sure know concretely. They don't actually have evidence that he is a drug user. So now they're like, okay, he might just actually have a mental illness and he might be a paranoid schizophrenic. Cut to Ben. He is mixing salt with water and trying to baptize himself in his bathroom. Hope that sink drain is fixed. Ben recognizes that he's having a mental health crisis, and he makes the informed decision to ask for help. Calls his mother. The shots we get of her, we see that she is surrounded by hanging crucifixes, so she must be very religious. Which makes sense because Ben was trying to self-baptize as one does.
As one does.
So he asks her for help and his mother goes, what can Mama do to help? Are you stuttering again? And from this sentence alone, we, the audience, know that Mama is only going to make things so much worse.
Yeah, he is under the thumb of a powerful woman.
What can Mommy do to help? And are you stuttering again?
Mama, they're back.
Have you taken the medication?
You know, it doesn't work.
I'm getting sick of this call, Ben. You can't hold down that job. You can barely function. Are you praying, Ben?
Maybe I should kill myself.
Ben, you need to go to church like I told you. The church helped you the last time with this problem.
Mama, I need help now.
Then find a Yellow Pages and find a church nearby. I am sick of these calls and I am sick of listening to you.
No, Mama, please don't hang up.
Did you just see we got an email? We got paid 1 cent for running an ad.
Oh, wonderful. Guys, we have a Patreon. We have merch. You can give us 5 stars. Tell your friends about us.
Yeah, so we can get more than 1 cent for running an ad.
If CBS did sue us, we have no money.
We can give them 1 cent.
We could give them our merch. They could have a Hoyette t-shirt if they wanted, or a Pilf t-shirt.
Poor little Meow Meow shirt.
Abigail, you have a long-ass profile to read.
The BAU believes the unsub is a white male with paranoid schizophrenia who suffers from hallucinations. So they think this unsub is hypervigilant, and in his condition, he's unable to travel very far from his home. He kills at night and is extremely violent. During the day, he's most likely a loner, someone in the state who probably can't keep a job, and they believe something happened to the unsub in his childhood. Childhood voices are telling him to kill, or he's misinterpreting them as doing so. This unsub has probably been coping until now, but a recent stressor brought him back to that childhood incident and is causing him to act out. This unsub spends his days wandering, trying to fight the desire to kill, yet he feels trapped by his hallucinations. No matter what he does or tries to do, the hallucination's power is greater than his own. Because of his limited social circle as a child, it is the belief that the incident involved close friends or family. Once the BAU figures out what happened to the unsub when he was a kid and the stressor that recently triggered him, they'll be much closer to narrowing down the killer's identity.
While this profile is being given, we get lots of Tony Leiter action. I wonder if they specifically cast the role of Tony to an actor who was particularly gifted at opening and closing a lighter in a threatening manner, or if this just happened to be an unexpected perk. Anyways, Reed is a little fucked up about this whole schizophrenic thing, because as we know, Reed's mother struggles with the illness.
Jane Lynch!
We cut to Ben and Co. at night. He goes to a church looking for help. He meets with a priest. He asks for someone to talk to, and the priest is like, okay, but I'm just going to finish lighting these candles first, so you're going to have to wait a minute. Then tells the priest that he's been seeing things and also that his imaginary friends have been blaming him for the fire. When asked to further clarify, Ben gives us some lore, and he tells the priest that when he was 10, the church helped him because he was experiencing delusions. We see a flashback. And we recognize some of the parishioners at this church. It's Matt, Yolanda, and Tony. A different priest comes forward in this flashback and encourages the congregation to gather around and pray for Ben. They believe he is possessed by demons, when we really know that he has mental health issues. Ben tells us about the traumatic experience where he was like surrounded by parishioners who touched him and called his name. And the priest dropped water on his head to perform a quote-unquote exorcism. The priest who Ben is explaining this to in the Now Times is like, dude, you need to see a doctor. Ben, like, gets down on his knees and begs for an exorcism, and the priest is like, what you have is a medical problem. Churches do not perform exorcisms anymore.
I need you to do it again.
What you have is a medical problem, not a spiritual one.
Well, I've been to a doctor.
Churches don't perform exorcisms anymore.
I need you to make an exception.
I'm sorry, but I don't.
I need help.
Son.
I need help.
And we're back at Portland headquarters. Morgan finds Reed in the bathroom, and Reed is like really upset. And he tells Morgan, quote, the profile makes it seem like schizophrenia leads to serial killing. And Morgan says, that's not what we said at all. And Reed says, just because someone suffers from inability to organize their thoughts or they can't bathe or dress themselves, it doesn't mean they'll stab someone in the chest 30 times post-mortem.
Our unsub's hallucinations aren't fractured like a typical schizophrenic. They're vivid and clear, leading me to believe that we're missing an important variable. Rather than making crazy conjectures, I think we should be trying to figure out what it is.
Okay, listen to me. I know this is a scary age for you. It's when schizophrenic breaks happen. Have you talked to anybody about this?
Emily.
Have you seen the doctor?
They all say I'm fine.
Why don't you believe them?
Because predicting one's chances of developing a genetic condition are like finding a penny in an ocean. I have terrible headaches. I can't sleep at night. I can't focus on our cases. I only read 5 books last week.
Come on, kid. You got to cut yourself some slack. You're also depressed about Prentice, and I get it. We all are. Reed, I miss her every day. But if your mind was splitting, do you really think you'd be able to figure out that this team is missing a variable?
I'm just speculating that we are. We need to prove it.
Okay, then you do that.
They talk about missing Prentice, and Morgan tells Reed that if Reed was really struggling and having a mental health crisis, then he probably would not have realized that the team was missing an important piece of the puzzle. I don't like when people tell other people, you're not having a mental health crisis. This scene, I feel like, is okay. It's meant very lovingly. He's not, like, saying, oh, Reed, you're not having problems. He's trying to show Reed that, like, you are actually functioning in a way where you are helpful to this case. We cut to Ben getting on public transportation. His friends are telling him that if he had never used the lighter, then none of this would have happened, blah, blah, blah. Ben's friends are trying to get him to attack an old lady on the bus. She doesn't look that old.
No, she doesn't.
They're like, if you attack this woman, we'll leave forever. And he's like, okay. So he follows her home. Garcia looks into police records for the unsub when he was younger. Reed points out that the unsub buying water and salt in the supermarket could be a sign that he's trying to perform an exorcism. The team then decides to look for churches in the unsub's comfort zone, and they quickly find the priest that Ben spoke to like only hours ago, and he fills them in on the details. He says, quote, throughout history, people have confused possession with mental illness. And I love this priest, honestly. I like that he is like saying, absolutely not. You need to see a medical professional.
He said voices were blaming him for a fire and he needed me to get rid of them.
You're right. He thinks he's haunted.
Did he ask you for an exorcism?
Yes. He claimed his mother had taken him to get one when he was young.
And what did you tell him?
I couldn't do it. Throughout history, people have confused possession with mental illness. Some still do. Nowadays, most churches turn people like him over to medical professionals.
I'm assuming to take your rejection well.
He was very angry.
But he didn't attack you. He didn't threaten you in any way.
He's probably found help in the church before.
Was there anything else about his behavior that you found odd?
Something he maybe said or did?
No. I've told you everything. Well, there is one thing. He had a stutter.
Morgan and Reed ask the priest if the unsub did anything specific or odd, and the priest mentions that the unsub has a stutter. So Miss Donnelly and the supermarket manager, who we don't give a shit about, didn't mention stuttering. Garcia is going to try to narrow down her list of youthful offenders using the keywords stuttering and fire. Cut to the quote-unquote old lady from the bus. She's not that old. She's looking great, actually. She's getting ready for bed. She's putting on lotion, slathering herself down, as I do. Absolutely blasting classical music. But we later see that she has a twin bed with one pillow on it, so clearly there is something wrong with her. But she's in her bathrobe, and she's attacked and stabbed by Ben. Can we stop with the twin beds and the small beds on this show? Like,
there's a lot of small bed content.
It's small bed visibility when I'm trying to see, like, at least a queen or a king. You know, this woman would not be lathering herself with such care to get into a twin bed with one pillow. Come on, guys. One pillow? Are you insane? Anyways, cut to sometime later. The BAU arrives at this crime scene. So this body, and we don't get the name of this victim, it had like an imprint next to it, meaning that Ben like slept beside this body, which is like super creepy.
Yeah, on the floor.
He stabbed her 71 times, and Reed points out that the simple act of stabbing someone 71 times would be physically exhausting.
He slept here. Look at the number of stab wounds.
There's got to be over 50 of them.
71. Do you know how physically exhausting it would be to stab someone? I mean, it's hard enough to stab someone 10 times, but 71, I'd be completely worn out.
He's accelerated wound counts, which means he does it intentionally.
But why? Wait, that's it. If you add the increased number of stab wounds and the fact that he slept here to the vivid hallucinations and the unexplainable onset of stuttering, you get the missing variable. This guy's an insomniac.
Just as adrenaline makes a person love the feeling of killing, once it leaves the body, it makes them tired.
He does this all to sleep?
The insomnia is what makes the hallucinations so clear, and sleep is the only release that he has from them.
And he realizes that the unsub is an insomniac, and that the act of stabbing people makes him tired, and sleeping is the only release from his delusions. I don't know, it's a little, like...
What about, like, a gym?
At this point, it's too late, though, you know? Like, he's already murked people. He's already taken out Celery Nurse.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, there are other physical activities that can be done to make one sleepy.
Well, he did what he knew, you know?
I guess gym memberships can be expensive.
Yeah, it's true. You know, Planet Fitness. We're back with Ben. He is refreshed from his sleepy sleep, but his imaginary friends are still there, and he's pissed. So he stabs Matt, then he goes after Tony with a chair. And I was like, if I was this guy's neighbor, I would be calling the landlord, like, you need to find me another apartment. Ben attacks Yolanda and he hallucinates that he has killed his friends, but then they come back and harass him.
You know what? People overstaying their welcome is a huge pet peeve, though. Like, I also would get violent.
Girl, I mean, they just follow him around. They're like his posse. They're like his minions. He can't get a fucking moment alone, you know? Like, he's got to sleep next to a corpse that he stabbed 71 times just to fucking get some relief, you know?
Right.
We're back with Garcia, and she found the unsub Ben Foster. He moved to Portland 3 months ago after he was in an apartment fire, which was his stressor. When he was 10, he was questioned in an investigation about another fire that killed 3 people.
Oh my, when he was 10, he was questioned during an investigation about a fire that killed 3 people.
Could be part of the homicidal triad.
I'm looking at the police report right now. It turns out 2 months before, his mom had a local minister perform an exorcism on him, and the 3 people who were killed in the fire helped perform that exorcism.
Has Ben charged?
No, he was acquitted in juvie court.
And the 3 people in the fire being Tony, Yolanda, and Matt, they were church parishioners who helped help the priest perform an exorcism on Ben. So they turn up at Ben's apartment, but Ben's imaginary friends warn him that he needs to go and run, and he tries to fight them, but then his own reflection in the mirror is like, it's time to go, Ben. Moments later, the BAU burst into the apartment. They find Ben escaping out the back. Morgan and Seaver pursue him. Ben continues to hallucinate that his friends are helping him. Rossi and the local PD join the chase, and for a while it seems like Ben might be getting away. He breaks into a house. Well, by break in, I mean the door was open, and he just goes in. The house he breaks into has 2 small children in it. They hear Ben enter and they come running downstairs thinking it's their mother. I guess that'll teach you to leave the door open. He's got a knife. He has them close all the blinds in the home and like holds them at, you could tell I was tired. I wrote gunpoint, it's knife point. Unfortunately, this is super sus because this is the only house in the area with the blinds closed. So the BAU is like, yeah, he's in that house. Yolanda tells Ben to take the little kid out first, and then Matt suggests to take out the girl. She's useless. But before Ben can do anything, the BAU barges in, guns drawn. Ben is still holding the knife. He's not really, like, holding the kids hostage. She's just kind of, like, holding the knife at the BAU. And Reed really tries to reason with Ben. He tells Ben to drop the knife, that he's not responsible for the deaths of Matt, Yolanda, and Tony. Hotch and Morgan are also super helpful. I'm going to like put this whole clip in here because I think that this is like not the first time, but like the first time on this scale where we have like 3 experienced profilers all trying to advocate for this person who is like experiencing a mental health crisis. in a helpful way, I thought, in a way that really showed that they had an understanding of his mental illness. Where normally we'll just see like Reed or Rossi or like one of them going face to face with an unsub. It was all three of them being like, no, 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 Ben, we're going to get you help. We know what happened. And I thought it was really well done.
Ben, we're not going to shoot you, but we do need you to put down that knife, okay? Where are the other people in this room, Ben?
Yeah, right there. Did you see him?
Right here? Were they there for the exorcism?
Mm-hmm. I didn't kill him, though. I didn't do it.
Liar.
And I'm not lying.
Ben, they're dead and they can't hurt you anymore.
They can't.
No, Ben. Your mind is playing tricks on you. Once you get help, it'll all stop.
We're never going to stop, Ben.
Yes, you are.
Not until we're done with you.
You okay? I killed you. I set the fire.
It's about time, Ben.
Ben, listen to us. It's okay. We're going to get you a doctor's help. I promise you that.
No. You know, the only way that you can help me is if you do it. Kill me.
Ben, that's not true.
And I thought that this episode was like pretty respectful about schizophrenia. And I like when there's a character in the episode rebuffing things that other characters are saying. So I just really liked how it was done. It kind of like humanized it in a way that I thought was really necessary. And you feel bad for Ben too, because he's like, the whole time he's like, I don't want to do this. Like, he's not thrilled about this. But while the BAU is trying to be helpful, Ben's imaginary friends are like contradicting everything the BAU says. Ben charges at the BAU and they do shoot him, but they call for an ambulance. On the BAU jet, Morgan talks to Seaver. She tells Morgan that according to Ben's file, he was seeing evil imaginary friends ever since he was a child. She says, quote, I always viewed serial killers as monsters, but Ben's remorse seems real. And that's why I can't sleep. I can't get him out of my mind. Does it ever go away? And Morgan kind of looks at Reed, and Reed is fast asleep. And Morgan says, luckily it does. And then we see Ben. He's still alive. He is getting treatment. I guess he gets electroshock therapy, which was a little alarming to me at 1 a.m. writing this up. But I don't really know enough about schizophrenia to know if that's like a common treatment that is helpful. The one person I know who is schizophrenic takes pills, but I don't know. So anyways, I was a little alarmed by that, but not to say that that is not something that they use. I don't know. Let us know if you know, is what I'm saying. So the doctor asks Ben how he feels, and he looks like really tired, but he kind of smiles and nods. And then we see that his imaginary friends are still there with him. And he's like, what are you doing here? And they're like, we're never going away.
What are you doing here? I said you'd go away.
You don't want that, do you, Ben?
It's not up to me. They said I was sick. They'd fix me.
Our spirits have been with you your whole life, Ben.
No. You've been with me since the church fire.
You sure about that, Ben?
We see a flashback to Ben as a kid. And he sees like three shadowy figures in his periphery, implying that like he's been seeing them his whole life. And that like it didn't necessarily have to be the three people that he actually ended up killing, but he just always felt this sort of dark presence in his life, which is kind of like a interesting way to end this episode. I don't know. It was kind of an interesting choice, but I'm not mental health expert, so I don't know. Do you have time for a deep dive?
I have time for a quick deep dive.
Okay, what do you got?
Exorcisms, baby.
Oh my God.
To define an exorcism, it is the religious or spiritual practice of evicting demons, jinns, or other malevolent spirits, spiritual entities, from a person or an area that is believed to be possessed. Depending on the spiritual beliefs of the exorcist, this could be done by causing the entity to swear an oath, performing an elaborate ritual, or simply commanding it to depart in the name of a higher power. And this is a really, really old and ancient belief system of many different cultures and religions. So it's across a lot of things. However, I think the most common that we see, like, in media representations is either Catholic or Christian exorcisms. For Catholicism, an exorcism is seen as a specific form of prayer that the church uses against the power of the devil. And I'm going to talk about specifically for this deep dive, just Catholicism with exorcisms, because it looked like it was a Catholic priest that we saw Ben approach. And so basically it is a prayer that falls into the category of sacramentals. And so it is a number of sacred signs instituted by the church to sanctify different circumstances of life. And there is a scriptural basis for exorcisms. There are also different kinds of exorcisms. They're divided into two kinds or forms. Simple or minor forms of an exorcism are found in like two places. Those who are preparing for baptism, like the rite of Christian initiation of adults and the rite of baptism for children. So those both call for minor exorcisms, basically. The second is the solemn or like, quote, major exorcism. It's a rite that can only be performed by a bishop or a priest and with like express permission from the local ordinancy, and it is directed, quote, at the expulsion of demons or the liberation of a person from demonic possession. This is not something I have a source for, like a written source for, but according to someone I know, it is like a very involved process to become a bishop or priest who is able to do exorcisms. It's like an involved process and requires like a pretty dedicated amount of time. People in the community aren't supposed to know that you're training to be able to do exorcisms. I don't exactly remember all of the details of it, but it's like kind of involved. The church is like very cautiously moving when evaluating these alleged cases of possession. They don't want to deny access to people who are in genuine need. However, they're also like concerned that individuals not be caught up in like sensationalist mentality and like, you know, want it to be create like a showy affair. Was it the Annalise Mitchell case that you talked about before?
Not her. I talked about Joan Vollmer. So if you want to hear how upset I am about Joan Vollmer, you can listen to Demonology, because I was pretty hyped to talk about her case.
And then I also found an article talking about how there's been an increase in exorcisms in Oregon following protests. So that's interesting. But yeah, I think that's where I might leave it at.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about exorcisms at all. You know, I do know, particularly with the Joan Vollmer case, that those people like weren't sanctioned at all. And they were like, oh, this guy just seems like he might be able to do it. You know, and it ended up killing this woman who was really mentally ill. So you should definitely listen to that. But we might have a in with someone who has some details about being an exorcist. And if we do, we will share those at another time. I'm definitely interested in hearing like the preparations and stuff, like from like the pragmatic side of it. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what we can do. But we should rate this episode because you got to go to work.
criminal/serial killer. I feel really bad for him.
Yeah, I did too. I think they did a really good job of making him likable and making it very obvious, like blatantly obvious, that he was like, I don't want to kill. I don't want to do this. I really don't want to do this. And then also really humanizing the mental illness side of things, which they have been doing recently. But I was really feeling the love in this episode. But is he my favorite serial killer in the world, or even in this season, or even recently? No.
I feel bad for him, but I don't, yeah.
I mean, I would say anywhere from a 12 to a 15.
Let's do a 13. Character development, character arcs. We got some concern from Reed, which I think is important.
I liked the Reed and Morgan situation. I liked how they both kind of, they had different viewpoints and they were able to talk about it in a really like respectful, nice way. I would say 12 to 15 for me on that.
I'm going to do 13. Forensics and context. I mean, the blood spattered celery was pretty special.
I didn't pick up on that, but when they do go to Karen's apartment, they do find the blood-spattered celery, which is iconic. Feminist icon, blood-spattered celery. You know, I don't know. I'm going to keep on this 12 to 15 train and just keep riding it.
Yeah, I'm going to say 12.
Okay.
Script writing. What are we going to do if there's no guacamole?
There were some great moments. I'm gonna say, if we skip to background characters, I would love to give Donnelly a 20 because she was a star.
Donnelly gets a 20.
Script writing, there were some things I really just felt not happy about, aka the celery, which we will soon get the results of the poll for. Some things I thought were really funny. This episode doesn't tickle my ivories, you know, like that child in that episode.
Okay, we're with Oreos winning with 18 votes and celery getting 2.
Oh, celery has 3 votes, actually.
Oh, celery did just get another vote.
Also, Criminal Minds Confessions messaged us and was like, who voted for celery? And I said, Abigail. But back to script writing. I don't know, man. Shoof. What do you think? You can choose. Because you like this one. You've got fresh eyes on it.
Let's give it a 14. All right. So that gives us a grand total of 72.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We are on Subset Criminal Minds Podcast, the podcast that chooses Oreos over celery. If you have any thoughts on that or you want to write to us, there are links in the show notes. Follow us everywhere on Subs Podcast. We have a Patreon. We have a Ko-fi. You can give us 5 stars and really, like, that makes me so happy. You can follow me, yournewapartment.tumblr.com.
And you can follow me on Instagram at little_gnome_facts.
Well, peace out, guys. Thanks for hanging with us. And don't forget the guacamole.
Yeah, the guacamole.
Bye.
Bye.